beautiful campus of Texas A&M University, the Sidney and J.L. Huffines Institute for Sports Medicine and Human Performance in the Department of Health and Kinesiology brings you the Sports Medicine Podcast. Our mission is to make sense of and connect the science, practice, and application of the latest findings in sports medicine and human performance to the real world. Here's our host, the director of the Huffines Institute, Dr. Tim Lightfoot.
Well, welcome to the Huffines Sports Medicine Podcast. We're glad you joined us today, and we really appreciate the fact that you decided to spend a little time with us. And we're going to try to take you through the world of sports medicine and all the different variables and varieties that are out there. And today, we're pleased to have Dr. Chris Woodman with us. Dr. Woodman is an assistant professor here at Texas A&M in health and kinesiology, and quite a distinguished background. We won't take a whole lot of time to just let you know he did get his PhD at University of Arizona, and it did some postdoctoral work at University of Missouri, where he also worked with NASA for a while. So welcome this morning, Chris.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks for being with us. I want to chat a little bit today about some of the research that you're doing and how it all relates to the wide and wacky world of sports medicine. And so tell us what your research focus is. What are you working on in the lab right now?
Well, we're really a lab that focuses on cardiovascular function, and we're really focused on cardiovascular health. And so we know that as we get older, the likelihood of us getting a cardiovascular disease gets much higher. We're interested in determining why we become at more risk as we get older. We want to learn what's causing that, and then in the long term, try to figure out ways to minimize the effects of aging, or if you've already got some kind of a cardiovascular disease, if you can use some types of exercise interventions to improve your cardiovascular health and your quality of life.
Well, that's great. Now, from reading some of your publication that you've already got out there, and you do a lot of work with epithelium, I believe?
Well, endothelial cells.
And endothelial cells, mm-hmm. Okay. Can you tell us a little bit about what those are and what kind of role they play? And
well, that's a good question, because if you actually look back about 30 years in the scientific literature, that would say that they don't do pretty much of anything, that they're just a permeability barrier. They provide a barrier between the blood and vascular smooth muscle cells that make up the wall of a blood vessel. So they kind of regulate things getting from the blood to the tissues that need them. But actually, if you look at back about 1980, a series of studies started showing up in the literature which suggests that those vessels actually play a critical role in cardiovascular health, and that if these cells don't work properly, you're at much greater risk for cardiovascular disease. And actually, damage to these cells appears to play a causative role in, for example, developing atherosclerosis. So we went from a condition 30 years ago where we thought these cells didn't play a role in physiology to one where we know that they're essential for cardiovascular health. And actually, three people that worked with these cells won the Nobel Prize in Physiology and Medicine for discovering that endothelial cells produce a factor that's released in axons, smooth muscle caused vessels, to dilate when they need to dilate and give you more blood flow.
So these cells that they didn't think did anything actually secrete a substance that somebody found out and that they actually won the Nobel Prize for. Now, what's the substance called?
It's nitric oxide.
And so is that the same stuff that I get at the dentist office?
Well, not exactly. So it is a gas. So it's going to be produced by the endothelial cells, and since it's a gas, it can freely move out of those cells and act on cells surrounding it. And in blood vessels, those cells happen to be smooth muscle cells, and like any other muscle cell, it can relax and contract. And the ability of those to relax and contract determine how much blood flow can get through that vessel to a particular tissue. And so these endothelial cells actually communicate with those surrounding smooth muscle cells to regulate your blood pressure, regulate where your blood flow is going to go. With respect to exercise, appears that it may play a role in allowing blood flow to particular muscles to increase so that you can get oxygen to those tissues.
So when I start exercising, these endothelial cells, they start to produce nitric oxide, which causes dilation or vessels to relax. So when I exercise, I'm actually producing maybe something similar to laughing gas in my cells?
No, nitrous oxide has a similar name, but it's a very different compound. And so that's actually an anesthetic not produced by the body and would not be beneficial in a cardiovascular sense to you. Nitric oxide is a gas, but it's produced in the body by these endothelial cells and can actually mediate a lot of the cardiovascular responses and protective effects on the cardiovascular system.
So the nitric oxide is what the endothelial cells make, and the nitrous oxide is what the dentist uses to put me, make me more funny than I really am.
That's right. And they're very, very different compounds.
Okay, so we're talking about nitric oxide.
Right.
Got it. So, you know, it's really, really interesting to me is what attracted you to this area of study? It's not every day that you stumble upon people who are interested in the lining of tissues and what substances they make.
Yeah, it's definitely been a progression. So when I first got into research as a graduate student, my primary interest was NASA and looking at physiological adjustments that occur during spaceflight. And so a lot of the work that I did in Charles Tipton's lab was to look at the effects of spaceflight on aerobic exercise capacity and determine why that might decline following a spaceflight. And one of the things that we found was it appeared that the ability to increase blood flow to muscle during exercise was compromised. And didn't really know why that was. There could have been a lot of explanations for it, but as when I finished up my degree in Arizona, I went to another lab at the University of Missouri to study with Harold Laughlin, who studied endothelial function. And he had looked at the ability of these cells to adapt to training. So it made sense that if these cells could adapt to become more functional with training, that maybe with spaceflight, when you have presumably reduced activity or reduced loads on these muscles, that maybe that went in the opposite direction, that these cells would become dysfunctional.
Did they?
Well, they do in models. So if you simulate microgravity either with bed rest or if you use some animal models where they mimic the conditions, those cells become dysfunctional and they actually start to behave like endothelial cells from an elderly person.
Really?
And so that was the link for me. It was that I started to become intrigued by the really close parallel, at least in the vascular system, between spaceflight and aging. And so the aging really drew my attention, and it had, to me, more applicability to a larger population. Maybe the long-term benefits of research in this area might have a little bit more impact for me, interest-wise. And so it was a definite progression.
Yeah, interesting. So getting back, I like this idea. I'm very interested in this idea of these endothelial cells making nitric oxide. And you talked about how when you get older, there's some dysfunction there. Is this lack of nitric oxide problematic? I know you said it may lead to some heart disease.
Yes, definitely. When these endothelial cells become damaged and they have an impaired ability to produce and release that gas, then that is an increased risk factor for a number of cardiovascular diseases. So you'd be much more likely to develop atherosclerosis, hypertension, even things like diabetes are associated with endothelial dysfunction. So that's the bad news. Those endothelial cells appear to be able to become dysfunctional and cause a lot of problems. The good news is they also are very responsive to exercise. So if you can get somebody to walk or increase their activity level, even if those cells are already damaged, it appears to actually reverse that damage and improve cardiovascular function and certainly could improve quality of life for the elderly.
So exercise, now is it any particular kind of exercise that helps these cells perform better, or is it just going out and walking, or is it weightlifting, or what?
It could be a combination of exercise. Most of the studies would suggest that aerobic type of exercises, whether you're walking or riding a bike or jogging, would be that's the best understood intervention as far as exercise is concerned. There are certainly some studies out there that would suggest that weight training or resistance type exercise can have some impact on the endothelial cells as well. It's possible that combining the two may be important, but certainly just getting out and walking every day appears to have a fairly substantial impact on endothelial function. So if a person has high blood pressure, there's studies out there that show that they just do a modest walking intervention where they're going out and walking daily, it actually improves their endothelial function and helps bring their blood pressure down.
Now, when you talk about modest walking, are you talking about going out and walking 10 miles or 3 miles?
No, I think any type of exercise, a walking exercise, would be of benefit, but certainly just walking at your typical person walking at 3-mile-per-hour pace, walking for 30 minutes, walking for an hour would be better, and it wouldn't have to be continuous, I don't believe. I think that periodic increases in activity would stimulate those adjustments as well.
So that's really cool. So that sounds like it's fairly easy to do. All they have to do is just sometime during the day do at least 30 minutes of walking. Maybe an hour would be best, but...
If you could accumulate an hour of activity a day, that was certainly would, I think, would be best for your endothelial function and your vascular health. Does not have to be have to be continuous if you can accumulate it over time. The nice thing about it is if you can do it with somebody, then it makes it a lot more fun and you're more likely to stick with it. So if you can get a walking buddy or somebody that can, whether it's a spouse or a friend, or I know here at Texas A&M, a lot of people have walking buddies and they go out instead of sitting down in the cafeteria and eating lunch for an hour, they'll go out and walk around campus for an hour, and that's certainly going to go a long way to maintaining their vascular health.
And people could do that anywhere. Wherever they're at, they can go out and walk at lunch or
anybody
walk their
can
dogs
walk,
or walk
can,
their pets
can,
or whatever.
Just accumulating activity. So if you're working in a building on the third floor, take the stairs instead of going up the elevator when you come in the morning or as you're moving around the building during the day. So just increase that activity level as much as you can throughout the day and on every day, preferably.
Okay. Well, let me move this a little bit. So we've been talking about maintaining health. Can it help us maintain performance in any way? Is there any application towards human performance? If I go out there and I exercise a whole lot and I get a lot more nitric oxide running through my system, is that going to make me perform better? Let's say that I'm already a fairly decent athlete, like our producer here, Justin, and I just wanted to, you know, take that next step. Does nitric oxide play a role in any performance enhancements?
It really does not appear that it will. The thing about the endothelium is that when you're young and healthy, it appears to be producing nitric oxide at the level that it wants to. Hmm. And the benefit of exercise, you don't appear to improve that much with training in a normal, healthy, young individual. But the problem is that most people aren't active, and these cells become damaged with time. And so the real benefit of exercise is to prevent that decline in endothelial function. And if you've already got endothelial cell dysfunction, if you've got atherosclerosis, hypertension, if you're just an older person, if you introduce activity to those individuals after they have the dysfunction, it appears to improve it and get those vessels to behave more like a young, healthy person.
So it'll help keep me healthy, but it won't necessarily improve my performance.
I don't think it's going
to look at other ways to do that.
I think that you're going to have to look at other ways to do that. Certainly, aerobic exercise training programs are going to improve your cardiovascular capability, but I don't think it's going to necessarily be linked to an improvement in the ability to produce nitric oxide.
Now, if I recall, and I could be wrong on this, I think that haven't you said someplace that if I don't make nitric oxide, that this may lead towards chronic inflammation? Processes or
it could or it could what? Be actually the reverse. So inflammation, actually a chronic low-grade inflammation appears to damage endothelial cells.
Which becomes
a cyclic problem, so that you get more inflammation and more damage to those cells. So, but there's certainly a link.
Yeah, so aren't there some new theories out there about the chronic low-grade inflammation that's actually causing some of this stuff, and you're saying
chronic low-grade inflammation and chronic production of reactive oxygen species, things like
okay, what's that? What's reactive oxygen species?
Reactive oxygen species are things that are actually going to break down nitric oxide. So the amount of nitric oxide available at any given time in a blood vessel or an endothelial cell or smooth muscle, it's going to be determined by how much is being made, but it's also going to be determined by how fast it's being broken down. And so oxidative stress, reactive oxygen species, those things actually break down the nitric oxide, and then the vessels will not dilate properly, and that is also probably a causative factor in a lot of your cardiovascular diseases.
Now, I've seen a lot of supplements that talk about their antioxidant properties. Now, will those antioxidants, will they break down those reactive oxygen species before they hurt nitric oxide, or is...
Antioxidants will help maintain the viability of nitric oxide. So things as simple as vitamin C. If you add vitamin C to a vessel that has endothelial dysfunction in a laboratory setting, that vitamin C will scavenge or remove some of those free radicals or reactive oxygen species and actually allow nitric oxide to do its job better.
So we were talking about the importance of daily exercise, but now we're talking about good nutrition as well as helping to maintain our endothelial cells' viability.
Sure. This is certainly going to be a component to it. So the maintaining an active lifestyle, maintaining a healthy diet, I think is going to go a long way to maintaining the health of endothelial cells in the blood vessels themselves. And if you every once in a while you hear these news stories come out that there's going to be an exercise pill and it's going to do all these things to maintain your health. And I personally just think that's unrealistic because it's just such a complicated system from vascular sense, from skeletal muscle sense to bone density, all these things that need to be maintained to age successfully is the term they use, to be healthy throughout the lifespan. The idea that you can come up with some kind of a pill that's going to target all of these things and make everything work is just, to me, not realistic. So the best approach is to figure out how much, what type, and how intense of the exercise do you need to target each of these things, like vascular health, to maintain your health throughout the lifespan.
So it's while we'd like a shortcut of a pill, could never make a pill that would have that much effect. And so we might as well just get used to the idea that we need to have good health, good diet and good activity.
Yeah, I think that, you know, we're a society where exercise is not necessarily something that people do first. And people could have a pill to make everything right, then that would be something that people would like. But to me, it doesn't make sense. It can't come up with a pill that's going to target everything in human physiology to maintain itself. But exercise appears to target a lot of things, and if you can maintain that active lifestyle, then you get all of these health benefits. And so to me, maintaining active lifestyle continuously, but if you haven't, even if you're already an older person, if you start exercising, assuming that your physician says it's okay, you're going to get a lot of these benefits and actually improve the quality of life.
Well, it's really, in one way, pretty humbling that these little endothelial cells that probably most of us don't even think of, probably you and how many other scientists in the country think of endothelial cells, but the majority of Americans don't think of these cells. They play such a large role in our health, and they're one of the major benefactors of exercise.
They are. I actually, here at Texas A&M, teach a exercise for clinical populations class where we go through a number of diseases over the course of the semester. And I think every disease that we talk about, we can find in the literature somewhere that says that these endothelial cells are damaged. And in some of those diseases, like atherosclerosis, it appears to be an initiating step in the process. In others, it appears to be a consequence of the disease. But either way, once these cells become damaged, then it also increases your likelihood of a cardiovascular disease. So if you are diabetic and these cells become damaged, then the likelihood of you getting cardiovascular disease goes up. And actually, most people with diabetes and ultimately end up dying of cardiovascular disease. So kind of the joke in that clinical exercise physiology class is that everything begins and ends with endothelial cells. It's not true, but the way I teach it is.
Well, and you hope all the grant funding agencies think that way too, right?
Well, that's the hope, that whenever you can have a clinical twist or a clinical benefit to your research, that's going to get some interest.
Yeah, excellent. Well, if we were to wrap up today and you were to give one take-home message for everybody that's listening about endothelial cells, see, I can't even say it, what would you tell them?
Keep them healthy. So the best way to keep them healthy is to maintain an active lifestyle. Start when you're young and continue throughout the lifespan. But if you didn't do that and you're already in your 50s or 60s, if you start to increase your activity, the good news is that these cells appear to respond to that quite quickly, and you can get a lot of benefit and reduce your cardiovascular disease risk.
So it's never too late.
It's never too late.
Sounds like a good T-shirt. Keep them healthy.
Keep them healthy.
Keep them healthy. So for those of you listening, if any of you put together the T-shirts, you can send all the benefits to Chris Woodman, care of Texas A&M. I'd like to thank you all today for listening and spending a little bit of time with us. I invite you to check back next week or your local podcast delivery mechanism. We'll have another podcast for you next week from the world of sports medicine. And I think you'll find, like it was today, that there'll be something new and interesting for you. I'd like to thank our producer, Justin Dobson, today for pulling everything together for us. And as we turn it over here to John for the closing credits, just like for you to remember to be active and be well.
Thanks for listening to the Huffines Institute Weekly Sports Medicine Podcast. This podcast was produced by Justin Dobson and made possible by generous support from the Omar Smith family and the Sydney and J.L. Huffines family. This podcast is published under a Creative Commons 3.0 license. That means you can't sell it or change it, but feel free to give it to everyone you know and to talk and blog about us. And in case you were wondering, our openings and closing are provided by johnmilesproductions.com, providing voiceovers internationally. Music was provided by Dave Zeltner. Find him on the web at davidzeltner.com. And just so you know, we love hearing from you. If you have questions or comments, please send them to huffinespodcast@hlkn.tamu.edu. From all of us at the Huffines Institute, we hope you have an active and healthy week.